thanks. So essentially, the first important thing to keep in mind is that everything I'm going to be talking today is still going to be about isolated systems. So everything is going to be like unitary dynamics and so on. And the question that I want to address is what happens when you take an isolated system, like close to what you would have experimentally with cold gases, and do something to it and let it evolve. So the plan of the talk is really, I'm going to tell a bit about the experiments very quickly, and then about some old work from last year of what happens, like in, you have a kind of a generic one-dimensional system. And then we are going to be then discussing what happens when you get to an integrable point and what's the dynamic like there, and then the summary. So, I mean, a lot of this work is really motivated by experiments, and you heard a bit about some of the experiments yesterday, and actually two of the experimentalists were here the last 2 weeks. So one of the great things about these experiments is that, you know, you can play with the dimensionality of the system. And for example, this is an example in which you take a Bose-Einstein condensate and you just load it into a two-dimensional optical lattice, and then you create an array of one-dimensional gases. And an interesting thing that happens there is that then you can play with the scattering length of these bosons along one dimension, and that was noted by Maxime Olshany a few years ago. And in particular, you can really get to a regime in which the scattering length it diverges, and then you essentially realize like one model of statistical mechanics which was introduced by Girardot in the 60s, which is very nice because you can exactly solve this problem and by a mapping to non-interacting fermions. So, and you see this was realized in the group of David Weiss also like 6 years ago, and this plot is kind of a clear example of how good those experiments are. So what is shown here is really this G2, which is something is measured by photo association, is telling you about the probability of having two bosons very close to each other, and is plotted as a function of how strong the confinement is in the transverse direction. And this is also, you could also think of it as, in the Lieb-Linegar sense, parameterizing your system by this gamma, that when it goes to infinity, it's a very strongly repulsive boson, and when it goes to zero, it's non-interacting. So, and these points are the experimental data, and the line is what you get exactly if you solve the Lieb-Linegar model, which was done by Shlavnikov and collaborators for this quantity. So you see this is really one on top of each other. So the other thing that you can do is you can introduce a lattice along these one-dimensional tubes, and if this gamma is very large, then you realize another model of statistical mechanics, which is this the XY model like introduced by Lieb, Schulz, and Maris. So, and that was done in the group of Imal Block at Munich. And this is an example of what he got there. So the points are really the momentum distribution function in the experiment, and the line is just the exact theory if you map these bosons to fermions. So you see this, then now we have a tool in which these experiments can really play and realize models that we've been solving for the last like 60 years. So once you have that, then you can start trying to go beyond the what you do, like what we know in equilibrium, and then try to get like really non-equilibrium physics out of it. And that was what David Weiss did actually. And what he did is he took this one-dimensional bosons, and then he applied some like laser pulses and took them out of equilibrium. And then he let them evolve in some harmonic trap. And after a long time, this was the kind of momentum profiles that he got. So, and this is a function of how strongly repulsive these bosons are. So here is very strongly repulsive, and here is when you are going towards the non-interacting limit. So, and what you see is essentially a distribution that is obviously non-thermal. So you have a harmonic trap. In equilibrium, you will never have a momentum distribution with these three peaks. So, and then even when he went away from this very strongly interacting limit, so he still didn't see anything that looked like thermal. So for example, in this case, the thermal distribution should be this dashed line, and what he got was something else. So essentially, as you can imagine, that motivated you know, a lot of
So the momentum distribution relaxes to this form, or
it right? It relaxes to that form. So after some time, it doesn't change anymore, and it has that form. So, and that motivated, of course, a lot of theoretical research. So we essentially started going looking at what happened in the integrable regime. But there were some other works that tried to go beyond the integrable regime. And for example, in this case, these were like the MRG studies. And what they did essentially, and this is basically summarized the kind of thing that we are going to be looking at later. So essentially one takes a system, some state of some Hamiltonian, and then at t equals 0, one changes the Hamiltonian. Okay? And then one will have some kind of dynamics. Then you wait long enough and look at how the distribution or whatever observable you have looks after a long time. And this is what they saw in this paper. They saw these red and green lines. And if you compare it with the thermal distribution, which is this blue one, then you see that it's kind of different. And then one of the questions was like, well, you see this is a non-interval system, so maybe really if you have isolated system, they will never thermalize. Okay, so and that's essentially the kind of thing that we want to address today.
What kind of technique was that using?
Time-dependent DMRG. Okay, so now let's try to see why there are some issues here that we need to understand. So what we are doing essentially is starting with some initial state, and this state is not a Rank state of the Hamiltonian on which we are doing the evolution. And it has some energy that is conserved because the system is isolated. So, and now what we are looking is at some observable, like experimentalists are looking at the momentum distribution function. It could be any other observable. And we are just looking at how that observable evolves in time, right? So, of course, the evolution here is unitary, right? So one cannot really start thinking about a state, whether the state is thermal. So that state is always evolving under some unitary evolution. So how are we going to define thermalization in this case? So the way we try to think about it is in terms of the observables. So we think if you have some generic observable, and then if you look at the kind of long time average of this observable, we will say, okay, it's, the system thermalizes if you can describe it by an ensemble like a microcanonical ensemble or a canonical ensemble of statistical mechanics. Okay, so that's what we're going to call thermalization. There is no real relaxation. This system is disconnected from the outside world. So, and then, well, you can immediately realize that there is a problem because now you can, expand the initial state in the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. And then you get this expression, which is an exact expression for the evolution of the observable. And now if you think, okay, let's just think about a generic non-interval system that has no degeneracies. So you would think, okay, if you do the infinite time average of that, what will happen is you are going to cancel all these off-diagonal elements, and you are going to get a result that looks like this. And this will be just the infinite time average of the observable, and this is something that we call a diagonal ensemble. And here is the problem, right? The problem is that you see that this depends on the initial condition through all these C alphas, which they are as many as the size of your Hilbert space. While usually what we are doing is comparing, just taking the energy or the temperature to build some kind of ensemble. So in general, this will, you would think this shouldn't be described as something like that. Okay? So, and then this is essentially what we are going to address here. Now, of course, the first question you are going to probably say is wait, you are doing something here that you are not allowed to do. Because you see, if these energies are very close, even if the system is non-integrable, it may take infinite time for the system to come to this infinite time average. So that's the first thing that I need to address. So now how are we going to do that? So we are going to study a one-dimensional system of, in this case, I'm going to stick to hardcore bosons, but if you are interested in what happened with the fermions, this is done in that work here, which has nearest neighbor hopping and interaction, and next nearest neighbor hopping and interaction. So this part of this Hamiltonian is integrable. So this can be mapped to the XXC spin chain. So that's the reason for having these two terms, which are the ones that are breaking integrability. So, and then we're going to look at the non-equilibrium dynamics of that. So, and the way I'm going to do it is I want to have access to any time after the quench. So I'm going to solve it by using a full exact normalization. So there are no errors here associated with like the MRG. So this is a full exact normalization, and of course I have to pay a price for it. And the price is I won't be able to do more than 8 bosons in 24 Larry sites. So the Hilbert space for this problem is, you see, it's almost a million. But using translational symmetry, the largest matrices we have to diagonalize are almost like 31,000 by 31,000. So, and the way I'm going to do the quench is I'm going to take an initial state that is an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian with this hopping and nearest neighbor interaction, and then I'm going to quench to this final hopping interaction. I'm not going to change the T prime and the B prime. Okay? And then we use all the state. This is just a full exact diagonalization of it. And remember, the first question we want to address is whether the time evolution will bring us to this infinite time average we can compute, since we have all the full spectrum in a reasonable time. Right? So that's the first question that we need to address. So let's look at it. So this is how the evolution looks like. And you see the time here. So and essentially, really in the order of, in this case, of like 10 times h bar over j, or over t in the... In this case, you relax to that infinite time average. And then, even though you have 8 bosons only, you see you stay very, very close to this infinite time average. Okay, so that's the first observation. So that is working pretty well. So you could, of course, say, like, well, this is just one observable, so you got lucky. So let's try to do another observable. That one was a momentum distribution function, right? So which is something that is measured in the experiments.
Previous one, it would reach the equilibrium, but then it seemed to go out of equilibrium.
Which one?
Come back the previous, when you
that was a restart. So this is a periodic. Okay. It stays there.
What was the initial state in the thing?
The initial state is an eigenstate of this Hamiltonian.
Ground state.
It's not the ground state. So this is the other thing that I'm going to, because I want to do some scaling, so I'm going to pick up some state that will always, for different Hamiltonian, give me, after the quench, always the same energy per particle. That's why I don't want to get stuck in...
The eigenstate of that that's at a particular energy.
Right, exactly, because I just want to be able to compare it for different values on T and B and so on. So this is not starting from the ground state. This is just whatever state give me the best energy per particle that I want. So
results are more or less independent of which eigenstate you choose.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to show that. So, and then you can look at another quantity. This is a density-density correlation, and this is what it does. So, you see, it does the same thing, and that's all you have for this system. You have one body correlation, two body, and then well, you will have to try to go for higher body. So, because these are hardcore bosons. So, you see, both of them do pretty much the same. So now let's try to be more quantitative. So what I'm showing here is essentially the difference between the time evolving, the full time evolving momentum distribution function, and the infinite time average. Okay? And here is for the momentum distribution function, and here is done for the structure factor. Okay, and that's why I need to really be able to play with any initial state, because what I want to keep constant is the effective temperature or the energy per particle after I do the quench for different values of T and B. And this is essentially, you see, as you move towards integrability and for two different system sizes. So, and what you see is what you would expect to see. For 21 sites, you see larger fluctuations and the mean is a bit further away from zero. But as you increase the system size, well, the fluctuations decrease and the mean goes towards zero. So essentially from here, all I could extract is that, you know, really this infinite time average makes sense. So this system seemed to be relaxing to be this infinite time average pretty quickly and staying around there, okay? So the expectation is if you increase the system size even further, then this is gonna go down and then you just get something that is almost zero, okay? And then at this point, I'm going to forget about time. Okay, this is the last time I'm going to talk about time here. So time is gone now from my problem, and then all I have to worry is about this infinite time average. So...
Delta NK at which K?
Pardon?
Which momentum?
No, this is integrated. So this is a full momentum. So I'm taking the difference between the full momentum distribution function. So I'm not hiding any K's here. So this is the full difference. Okay, so and then now we forget about time, and then we should start like.
Marcus, yeah. Sorry, how does the level space compare to the inverse time you've got here?
It's much smaller than that. Much, much smaller than that.
So you will eventually have returns, but for longer times.
You will always have returns if you have the system is isolated. But how long it takes is going to be a pretty long time. Yeah.
So what you're saying is that you can see a sort of infinite time average. You have an interval of time in which you can see.
Right, and it's reasonable experimentally. So what I'm saying is really this is working much better than the worst scenario that you would have in mind because of the level spacing.
And okay. I mean, this is true for any quench or just for quenches with high enough effective temperature?
You have to have a high enough temperature. If you have very few states that are populated, then you will have like crazy fluctuations and mm-hmm. yeah, revivals and so also. So really, you need a lot of all these eigenstates populated that have some finer overlap with initial state.
And how does this compare to the bandwidth of your excitations and many states you're populating?
You have
bandwidth of your finite state system.
Is small actually compared to the bandwidth of the full system. And I'm going to show some results about that. Yeah, mm-hmm. something later. But yeah, it's much smaller. Yeah.
Can this observation be interpreted in terms of completely random phases for CI for these closed energies?
So let's get there. Yeah, let's get there. So. Okay, so then now let's try to see. This is, you see, all up to here is everything just quantum mechanics, okay? I haven't like shown anything that has to do with any ensemble or, so now what we want to know is whether this infinite time average has anything to do with statistical mechanics. So the first thing that you could say, okay, well let's do some kind of canonical calculation, and you know how to do that. So all that you have to take care here is that you don't know what the temperature would be, and you have to fix it just considering what is the energy of your time evolving state. Okay, if you do that, well, you get this result here. So, and essentially, you see that even though you are far from integrability, I'm not showing which value of T prime and B prime, but this is far. So this kind of, the infinite time average and the canonical are kind of different. So, but then we have the full spectrum, so you would say, like, look, this system is pretty small. Why do you use canonical? You should try to use, like, microcanonical. And then if you do that, then good news kind of, you get kind of a very nice agreement between the time average and the microcanonical prediction, okay, if you are far from integrability. And now the question is, how is this behaving as you approach integrability, okay? So that's the full question
it's
there.
Like there is a problem with the 0 point, so everything is nice except...
Which 0 point?
K equals 0.
Oh, K equals 0, yeah, but that's this is for this particular case. So in other cases, it's even better than that. So that's not a big issue. So what we want to see is what is the difference between the full distribution. I mean, what is the total error you make, yeah.
But is that related to the fact that k equals 0 sees the boundaries quite strongly?
I mean, this is pretty highly excited state, so the correlations are pretty short. So it's probably not. It's just for this case. You will always have some fluctuations. The finite system is small. So but this is really the figure of merit here, like what you want to look. What you want to look is at the difference between this infinite time average, the full distribution, and the microcanonical prediction, okay? And this is plotted here as a function of, like, as you move away from integrability. And you see, this is done for two different effective temperatures and for the two observables, the momentum distribution function and the structure factor. And then what you see is essentially that close to integrability, you see that there are large differences between the diagonal and the microcanonical ensemble. So one would say, like, well, the system is kind of not thermalizing. And then far away, you see that the difference becomes very small. And now, with respect to the question I got before, is what happens if you start with different initial states? And this is what is done here. So I've just taken two different initial states, and I have quenched so that the mean energy per particle after the quench is the same. And what you see is also that in the part where you don't have this kind of thermalization, the infinite time average depends on the initial conditions. But if you go far away, then it doesn't depend on the initial condition. Of course, you are going to tell me, yeah, but this is given for one system size, so can we just kind of learn something about the thermodynamic limit? And the only way to get some insights about that is just going to smaller system size, because we cannot do it larger. And what you see is essentially that that away from integrability, the errors, they increase if you decrease the system size. So I mean, essentially the expectation is that as you increase system size, there will be a region where you will have like kind of a perfect agreement between the infinite time average and the microcanonical ensemble. Okay, and the same thing happens with initial state. So you see, even though the system is isolated, so all we are showing here is that, you know, these statistical ensembles are kind of working well, and the question is why. So, and let's try to get there. So this is a kind of the problem, and we are not the first that thought about this problem. Actually, there is someone in the audience that thought about that way before us. So, and this is essentially the thing that we've shown. We've shown that this sum, which depends on the initial condition through all these coefficients, is giving something that is equal to this sum, that essentially only depends on the initial condition through the energy of the initial state. So what are the possibilities? Well, I mean, let's try to see how these two things could be equal. One way is that, you know, for some like reason that we probably would not know, these C alphas almost do not like fluctuate, so that this is something that is really smooth. And could be like kind of a microcanonical or a canonical. And then, well, the two things would agree. That could be like I'm going to show that that's not happening. The other thing that could happen is that you have large fluctuations of both the C alphas and these A alphas, but for some reason they are totally uncorrelated, and then they just average out to the same thing that happened in any like statistical ensemble. And this case we can really not rule it out, but the other one, we definitely can see that this is what the C alphas are, you know, for two different quenches, like the ones that I showed you before.
You can't rule out the second one?
Yeah, we cannot rule it out. So that may happen.
Well, but the systems you have, you can diagonalize them, so you can measure A alpha.
Oh, no, yeah, it's not happening in our systems. But definitely, you cannot rule out that thermalization could happen in some cases because of that.
Yeah, that's. You can check this.
Oh yeah, no, it's not happening in our case. All I'm saying is that I cannot say that this is not going to happen, like in some cases, right? So the other one is really unlikely, and then essentially, if you do some diagonalization, what you will see is that these C alphas are first widely fluctuating. And second, they have nothing to do with like a thermal distribution, or this is like two states that, you know, give you the same observable after relaxation. So, but you see that the distribution of C alphas are very different.
What does physically relevant initial conditions mean?
Pardon?
What does physically relevant initial conditions mean?
Physically relevant initial conditions. Yeah, I mean, this, all I'm saying here is that I'm just taking a state that is created as an eigenstate or something else of some given Hamiltonian. So I haven't gone there because, I mean, you can just go to a spectrum and then just engineer whatever you want.
Okay, so that condition basically happens if you take your initial state as some quick.
Some other Hamiltonian, exactly, yeah. Right. And that's actually the case. That's where we can even like discuss that this goes to, it becomes very narrow in the thermodynamic limit. But then what is the other possibility? And this is actually something that was discussed several years ago by Dosh and Shuniki, who is here. And we actually heard about it when he came to give a colloquium at USC. I was there as a postdoc. And the other possibility is to have the expectation value of the observables here to be something that almost does not fluctuate between states that have very close energy. Okay? If that is the case, then what you will see, This C alpha square, and actually Andreas was talking about that yesterday, this we know that is peak at the mean energy of the time evolving state. So what will happen if these guys do not fluctuate, you take them out, this is one. And essentially here is the same. So this is going to be just this n, and then you just have that what you are looking at is just like the expectation value of the observable in some given like eigenstate. So, and that's like kind of saying like the thermalization is happening at the level of the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. And that's why now, I mean, we kind of call it like eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So, and now we can look at it, and if we plot the momentum distribution function of the four closest eigenstate of to this mean energy, what you see is they are all have the same momentum distribution function. And if you look at the full spectrum, and now we are plotting only the k equals zero, what you see is that that it becomes something that is like very narrow as you increase the energy. So you have some part here that would actually depend how far you are from integrability, in which this is not satisfied, but afterwards, then it becomes something that is almost independent with the system. Okay, and then, so what then, what goes wrong when you approach integrability? This is what goes wrong, like the Eigenstate thermalization hypothesis doesn't work anymore. So you essentially will have a very large dispersion of the eigenstates. Okay, so, and with that, I'm probably gonna stop on the issue of generic systems, and then I'm gonna try to understand what happens when you are at integrability, right? Because essentially I'm telling you that the Eigenstate thermalization hypothesis doesn't work, and if you want to really understand what the system relaxes to, then you have to go beyond that, okay?
Could you comment on what you know about if you don't start from an eigenstate, but from something slightly different? For example, the superposition of those four eigenstates with almost the same energy, would that give?
Well, I mean, you will have a lot of revivals, and essentially, yeah, you can engineer whatever state to get whatever you want. That's what will happen if you start like just playing with an initial state. So the first thing is you start with some eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, nothing happens, right? So you start with two, then you will have like revivals and so on, and then well, you can start playing from there on. Yeah. Okay, so let's see, and this was actually the way we started in this field. So what happens in the integrable regime? Because you see, when the experimentalists, they got the results, what we thought it was like, really what we don't understand is what happens when you get close to integrability, not what happens when you are far away from integrability.
I want to say something in response. Yeah, you said you take two of these eigenstates, of course, the time evolution will be a coherent
right.
superposition of those, but what operators are sensitive to that coherence? In these systems here, no local
right.
operator will be
will
able
probably
to.
That's yeah.
So although you have this coherent oscillation, right. you wouldn't see it in any observable.
Right, at least not on this one, but what I'm saying is like probably it's not going to be very hard to engineer one observable that will like see it. So if you have a general, well, you just have two states, and so, yeah, probably.
But the operator that goes from one state to the other.
It's a very non-local many body, I agree, yeah.
So it's nothing natural
yeah.
at all.
Okay, so maybe it's not gonna show up in like the observable, but you see your dynamic is gonna be something from which you are not gonna see any like mean value, or it's gonna be actually like fluctuating.
All the observables should be independent of the mixture.
The observables are
oh,
in
the
no, yeah, but we have to be careful there, because we just remove the off-diagonal part, and that off-diagonal part will play a role when once you create some special combination of them.
No, that's the question.
Yeah, so, but one could play. I have to admit that I haven't played with it, so, yeah. So, okay, so let's try to see what happens in the integrable case.
Go back to the previous slide. Before you go off
this one?
So, yeah. So, what are you concluding that basically, so long as you stay away from the revivals, you are basically saying that even though you had, you have an isolated system, you are somehow, it looks thermal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How exactly was all the phase information lost?
Yeah, in this defacing, right.
Yeah, but what is the insight? How was it lost?
What do you mean? It was like all this energy, eigenstates, they have very different energies, totally incommensurate and so on, and then they just deface.
It's not lost, it's hidden.
Yeah, it's just deface.
It's only in, it's there in some global operator.
Is it a time scale
that,
right. that if you waited long enough, then through the revivals you would see it?
Right,
or
these
is
are
it,
exponential.
Yeah.
It's going to take very long time. Yeah.
So your point is
but the coherence is still there.
Okay.
Right.
Just not present in any simple observable.
You are not going to see in the observables, right?
But the point is, could you choose other observables which would bring it out there?
Yeah, but they will be complicated, many body observables. That's exactly what David was saying, right? Like, I mean, definitely for the one particle density matrix or the density structure factor, it's not going to happen.
Well, you know, at some level,
I'm very
very short time.
Okay, so I think it's getting disordered, but okay, so then let's probably move towards the integrable case. So that you can like start discussing even more. I mean, there is one thing nice about the integrable case, and is that we are not restricted to those small system size. So actually for integrable systems, we can even study what would be like the thermodynamic limit. And I'm not gonna bore you with that, but we are gonna consider the case of like hardcore bosons in some potential, and then you go the standard way, you map them to non-interacting fermions, and then you can get one particle correlations just using kind of properties of Slater determinants. And here the trick is that now we can do time evolution, arbitrary time, and our computational time is gonna scale polynomial in system size. Okay, it's gonna be the system size squared and the number of particles cubed. So you can really study very large system sizes, even larger than the ones that they have in the experiments. So, and you can do also the finite temperature, like you can compute what the grand canonical ensemble will predict, and this would be the scale. So this is the kind of approach that is followed for the result that come now, okay? So, okay, and then what kind of thing we could do? Well, something similar to what experimentalists do. So we can just think of a Gedanken experiment in which you have this, some kind of box with bosons, and then open it in a larger box. And then look at the dynamics. And this is what you are gonna see if you do that. So this is essentially the density, and this is what's happening with the momentum distribution function. So, and what you see is that, well, the density goes something like it's homogeneous, and this is kind of trivial. This, you can get it very easily just because of defacing. Because these are like non-interacting fermions, but what's really kind of less easy to understand is what's happening with the momentum distribution function. And what you see is that it's really relaxed to something that is not changing in time, okay? And at first sight, you would say, well, that almost looks like thermal, right? But then you have to do some calculation to check what that is. But you see here, you don't even need to do any like time average. So the system is so big that the time fluctuations are like really negligible. So any shot that we take there is already good enough. So now let's try to understand what that is.
Question before we go on.
Yeah.
This is a bit premature, but you're doing a quadratic Hamiltonian, which is integrable in a slightly different sense from depth tensor.
It's not totally quadratic. It's not quadratic for the hardcore bosons because of this constraint here. Okay, so essentially, if I would look at the density, which is what I'm saying, is quadratic Hamiltonian, but if I look at momentum distribution function, it's really not quadratic. So, okay, and then here we go and do the same thing. Let's try to look at what the thermal equilibrium will predict. And in this case, the systems are larger, so we even use the grand canonical ensemble. And this is what the momentum distribution function looks like, the k equals zero as a function of time, and this is what the thermal will predict. So you see it's different. And this is the full momentum distribution function after relaxation. And I'm showing for two different system sizes so that you see that the finite size effects are negligible here. And you see that it's clearly different from the thermal distribution. So, and this is essentially what you would expect. So you have an integrable system, so it shouldn't really relax to the thermal expectation value. So, and now the question is, okay, what do you do then? And what you would think is, okay, well, this system has a full set of conserved quantities that is constrained in the evolution. So let's try to follow the same idea that one follows for thermal equilibrium, and that's actually something that E.T. James did some time ago. And let's try to maximize the entropy of the system given all those constraints. So if you do that, you end up finding that the many-body particle density matrix has this form, in which you see that now, instead of having only here the Hamiltonian and the number of particles, you are going to have a sum over all conserved quantities. And then you will have a Lagrange multiplier for each of them. And then if you want to build ensemble, you have to find all those Lagrange multipliers given by the expectation value of the conserved quantities in your initial state. Okay? And then the good thing for this model is that we can do that analytically and then feed it into this numerical scheme. And if you do that, so this is what you get. You get that the constraint ensemble really perfectly describes the k equals zero. And if you look at the actual full momentum distribution function, it's totally described for it. Okay, so that works perfectly.
So which integrals of motion you're counting?
Okay, and in here what we did is essentially use the occupation of the eigenstate of the non-interacting fermions. So you can construct different sets, but here is the simplest way. So those are conserved because the non-interacting fermions are non-interacting, so their occupation doesn't change.
Have you ever tried to do this with a model which is truly interacting with interacting, I mean, a non-trivial S-matrix?
Well, I mean, that's a kind of a challenging task. No, we haven't done it. There are some other examples, like the 1 over R, how our modeling 1D, that was also done, but that can also be mapped to kind of a non-interacting problem. So, but this is an open question, yeah. One would have to really sit down and do it, and we are thinking about that, yeah.
Just recalling uh-huh. stat map. So am I right that this trick of using what you call Lagrangian multiplies works only in the thermodynamic limit, because as far as I remember, the requirement is that the constant of motion is additive. Otherwise, we cannot use this idea of
right.
the system being a heat bath for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that if you are doing something like finite size system, you will have systematics.
Definitely. Yeah. But these systems are large enough so that you are not seeing. Essentially, this is like a grand canonical ensemble.
It's a general. It's not a Lagrangian multiply. It looks like Lagrangian.
It looks like it. Yeah.
It's an additive constant of motion, and the whole theory is about
right.
separating a system into independent cells.
Right.
Yeah.
I am really additive integrals of motion.
Yeah.
So what does it say is the physical meaning of I am?
Yeah, these are conserved quantities in your system. Yeah.
If you cut the system into halves, will this I am be represented as the sum of something in the left half plus something in the right half?
Yeah, that's probably something difficult to see. Yeah. So yeah, probably it's not going to be exactly the sum. Yeah. I mean, these eyes are like definitely kind of tricky objects also, because and you can have you have several ways of constructing them, and actually there will be some examples. I mean, we can have a discussion about that. Okay, so we can have
Would you expect the momentum distribution is generally different from the thermal distribution for any integrable system, or is this a feature of this integrable system?
Yeah, no, it's gonna be, that's what we expect. It's gonna be generally different. Yeah. Yeah, we've tried with some other systems, yeah, and it's different. Well, you saw it, right? Before it was the TV model, which is the XXC. This one is the XX, and it was different too. So the other model is essentially the one that I was asked whether one can, that one is non-trivial, so the XXC. And then one would have to build all the conserved quantities and so on. But definitely we know that the momentum distribution function is different.
Well, since scattering is elastic, the momentum distribution function is not going to be partly affected.
No. The momentum distribution function is always going to be very strongly affected.
What do you mean?
Yeah, because these are the momentum distribution function of the real particles. So we had already like a long discussion about that. These are not your quasi particles. Yeah.
You're right.
Okay.
Thinking about quasi particles.
Okay. So and then the thing that we want to understand now is how did that happen? I mean, how can you really understand this from the microscopic point of view, right? And so you can go through the same exercise we went before for the non-integrable case, and then you will find out that everything follows, except that now here, instead of having something that is described by the energy or the temperature, you have something that is described by an ensemble that considers L conserved quantities. Okay, and then you keep going, and then everything works exactly okay, except that then you have a question, because in general, integrable systems will have degeneracies, right? So you don't have a level repulsion, and then at some point here you could say like, okay, maybe this is not going to be valid. So maybe you cannot take this infinite time average and then build it, describe it by the diagonal ensemble. Okay, so now let's try to get into the details of this, of how this is working in this case. So, and we decided actually to revisit this problem this year with Amy Cassidy and Charles Clark from NIST. And the way we are going to do it now is we are going to again have the hardcore bosons, but then to have some kind of control parameter, we are going to add a trap. We are going to initially start with a trap system in a box. So we are going to have a harmonic trap system in a box, and then we are going to operate the trap. So our initial state in this case is actually the ground state of that Hamiltonian. and then we let it evolve in the absence of the trap. So we always keep the final density constant, and as I showed you before, the dynamics and the generalized Gibbs ensemble, they can be gotten studied like in polynomial time. But now we want to look at canonical ensemble, microcanonical ensemble, diagonal ensemble, and those you have to really go and build the full spectrum and look at it. So, and we did it up to 50 sites with 10 particles. So really, Amy went over the calculation of 10 to the 10 state, and then she computed the momentum distribution function and so on of all those states to build the microcanonical and canonical ensemble. And then for the diagonal, one can use properties of Slater determinants to show that DC alphas, they can be also computed from the non-interacting fermionic matrices. So let's look at what the dynamics are. And this is something that is very similar to what you already saw, right? So you saw before there is some kind of revival here, and then it becomes like almost time independent. Now, what am I showing here is this purple like is like the dynamics, and then there is the diagonal ensemble result is the green. And now there is a new ensemble that I have to still like define, which is this generalized microcanonical ensemble. And this one is a microcanonical version of the generalized Gibbs ensemble, which was a grand canonical ensemble. So I'm going to define that later. I just want you to see that it's working pretty well. And if you look at the microcanonical, it's off. And this is for long times. So and now, of course, we want to look at scaling. So we computed the difference between the diagonal ensemble and the infinite and the diagonal ensemble and the time average, the real time average. So really, we took this and did the time average of the. And also what happened with the fluctuation. So, and this is what you get. So you see that the difference between these two is really kind of going to zero as 1/system size. So even though you will have in general the generalizes and so on, this diagonal ensemble is like working perfectly well. And if you look at the fluctuations, they are kind of going to zero as 1/√ of the system size. Okay, so and now let's try to, and then from here on again, we are going to forget about time and so on, and then just focus on these diagonal ensembles. So let's see, this. Let's just take a look at what happens for a site with a system with 50 like lattice sites. And what is shown here is essentially the momentum distribution function and the, so, let's see. So this is the momentum distribution function of the initial state. So this is for two different initial states. One that is kind of, bosons are like a superfluid regime, and the other one in which your trap is so strong that you have kind of a more insulator with one hardcore boson per side in the center of the trap. So this is the difference. That's why you see this momentum has a big peak, and this one is really very broad. So at this level, you really don't see any, like much of a difference between all ensembles. The diagonal, the generalized microcanonical, the GGE, and the microcanonical. But if you look at them at each point, what the relative errors are, you will see that the microcanonical ensemble is making a huge, it's huge error in the close to the tails. So while here they are all very similar, and this is something that actually like happened few times before in the literature that people did some kind of integrable system and they saw kind of thermalization, and then you say why. So one thing that you can do then is just look at what the distribution of the conserved quantities are, okay, in your diagonal ensemble and in the microcanonical ensemble, and if you do that for this case, you see that the diagonal and generalized microcanonical are very similar, but the microcanonical is very, very different. So essentially, the microcanonical is not really describing what your conserved quantities are doing, and that's why they are failing, it's failing when describing the observable. But here, they are all very similar. So you see, it's essentially, if you start with some initial state, right, that for some particular reason, it's like kind of sampling randomly your eigenstates in the integrable system. And it's really describing what your distribution of conserved quantities is. You could see something that looks thermal. But this will be just one particular case.
The conserved quantities are the same as before?
Yeah, the conserved quantity, everything is the same. Yeah, the n of k of the fermion.
You're starting with a non-translational invariant
system. Right.
So in principle, you have correlations of n of
k. You will have some correlations inside them, yeah, right.
So then, and this doesn't tell you how much correlated they are.
You don't see them here, right.
Yeah.
So, and then, okay, let me just try before I go to the scaling, try to define what this generalized microcanonical ensemble is. So essentially the idea is to have something equivalent to the microcanonical ensemble, but for an integrable system. And how are we gonna, how do we do that? So I'm gonna leave that there, I'm gonna tell you. So essentially what is happening is you have some initial state that will have some distribution. Do you see over there? Do you see this part here?
No, but I bet they don't.
Uh-oh.
Okay, we'll figure.
So let me just try to put it more to the. So essentially what is happening is you have some initial state that has some distribution of the conserved quantities, okay? This I should alpha, which is something like that, and then it becomes zero, okay? And now we want to build some kind of a target state, okay, that will satisfy the constraint imposed by like being an eigenstate of your Hamiltonian. What that means is that you see the conserved quantity in any eigenstate of the Hamiltonian can be only 0 or 1, because that's the way you build the eigenstate, just populated these non-interacting fermions, right? So they can only be 0 or 1. So we want to build a target distribution that has only zeros or ones, but that describes all the moments of this distribution here. And then that's what we do. We kind of like integrate, and then when we get like 0.5, which would be half of the first particle, then we put one state there, and then we integrate, and then we get, when we get one, we put the other one, and then you can imagine that this is going to look something like that. And then once we do that, we define a distance between any eigenstate and this target state that is here, this way, okay? So that's the way it works the best. But you can start playing, removing this, put a square, I mean, you name it. But if you do that, then you get this generalized microcanonical that I was showing you before. It really describes what the distribution of conserved quantities is. And this is essentially what you probably were waiting for, is like what happens after you change the initial conditions of the system. Okay, and this is the difference between this microcanonical generalized micro. This is in the microcanonical ensemble and the infinite time average, and this is between the generalized microcanonical and the infinite time average. And what you see is that there is a region here where, as you increase system size, you know, you are departing from the expectation value of this infinite time average. So essentially, in this regime, you know, for the infinitely large system, what you expect is to get a distribution that is from the microcanonical ensemble, which is different from the actual infinite time average. So this is the part that the microcanonical ensemble cannot describe. And then if you do the generalized microcanonical, you see that they are all very small and going towards zero. Okay? And then once again, one can look at the distribution of the conserved quantities, and you see that in this region here, the difference between the microcanonical and the initial states is always finite. So that's why this thing is in general not working well. But here it's going to zero. So there may be some regions in which integrable system, for some initial state, they are going to look thermal just because of that reason. Okay? And this is essentially what happens for the generalized microcanonical ensemble, that here is very nice because one can really do some scaling and see how it goes to zero in the thermodynamic limit, which is probably related to Boris' question, that definitely the generalized Gibbs ensemble that I showed you before, for any finite system, departs from the actual result of the infinite time average. It's shown here. And then as you go to the thermodynamic limit, it goes towards zero. Okay, so that's the...
Where's the specific power coming from, the 0.73?
Yeah, we don't know. It's looking, we did it for, actually for all these points, we did it, and it looks like around 0.75. So, but we don't know exactly where that's coming from.
But is 0.73 the same result of the Egyptians, isn't
it? I think it's around 0.75, I'm sorry. If you do it for, this scaling is from one of these points here, okay? We did it for many of them, and then it changed from side to, from energy to energy, but it was always fluctuating around 0.75.
Basically, how sure are you that this is a power? So.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no. All I can say is like I'm going to assume that it's a power, and then do the fitting, and then they all come with the same, more or less the same power. But.
What the second? So it's
0.73
plus minus what?
Oh, probably plus minus 0.5 or something. Like 0.05, yeah.
0.05.
So 0.05, it's in this digit here.
So the state is
ignoring the second digit, okay.
Yeah, it's in the second, yeah. But I agree with you. I mean, you know, I am assuming that there is a power law. I mean, I have only 4 points. That's it, okay?
Even 0.5 is pretty good accuracy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we get for all the values there. Right.
This plot on the right, do you think the system has a phase transition from a regime where it...
Here, you mean?
Yeah, where it...
It's very interesting, yeah.
It's looking more thermal than...
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know whether you will call it a phase transition, but I can tell you where this is happening. This is happening when you are creating the Mohr insulator in the center of the trap. So a Mohr insulator is like a Fock state. So it's kind of, you know, something that is completely decorrelating any base that you put it. So, and that is...
High energy you get it?
At here you create this Mohr insulator with one boson. This is a Fock state, like one boson per side. Uh-huh. So you see, this is a trap, right? So all I'm doing here is you have a trap with a lattice.
Okay.
Right? And then what I'm doing there is increasing the strength of the initial trap. So for low strength, that which is the one to the left, you will have a density profile that looks like this. Yeah. Okay? But then as you increase the trap at some point, and these are hardcore balls, so you cannot put...
Just changing the energy and going to higher temperature, you're...
I'm changing the initial state, which is this trap system. I'm just changing the trap, making it, like, stronger.
So that's the initial state.
Yeah, it's the initial state.
Property of the initial state.
Right, but...
And it's the ground state in the trap.
It's the ground state, but...
Okay, so... And in the ground state, you could go through a phase transition into the monads.
Right, and then you get this kind of insulating state, yeah.
I thought you were seeing something...
Right, so...
At high temperatures.
Okay, so now we can then look into more detail of what's happening here. So now let's look at, this is essentially what I'm showing you here is the momentum, the occupation of the momentum, the zero momentum mode in the full spectrum of the non-interacting system. Okay, so this is an integrable system. It doesn't satisfy the ETA, so you have these huge fluctuations here. Okay? What the microcanonical ensemble is doing is taking a window here and averaging everything. Now, if you look at which are the states that are contributing to the dynamics, the one that have a large overlap with the initial state, are only these here. So, and then you see essentially why you are, you know, like bound to fail. Like the microcanonical is blind to this, it's taking everyone, while this guy is only here. Okay, so what does the generalized microcanonical do? Well, look at it now. So essentially, it's really picking up states that are right there, where the initial state has large overlap with the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. Now, of course, you see that there are some difference between these two. And then, if you plot the histogram, this is the histogram. The green is the diagonal ensemble, is this one here, which is actually pretty symmetric. And then if you look at the generalized microcanonical, it's kind of, it's a different shape, but the same mean value. If you look at the microcanonical, it's a different shape and a different mean value. No? Now, what is going to happen in the thermodynamic limit? Really, we don't care about the shapes, because we know that the shape of the microcanonical and the canonical are actually different. But we know that as the system size goes to infinity, the window goes to zero, the width. So let's take a look at what the width do with increasing system size. And this is done for two values of k. And what we see, this is the blue is the generalized microcanonical and the green is the diagonal. So they actually go towards zero. So, and this is essentially telling you that there is something happening here which is very similar to this eigenstate thermalization hypothesis in the non-integrable case. So now you can think that what we are seeing is that once you restrict to all the states that have similar conserved quantities, they all have similar observables, so like few body observables. And this is just to remind you, this would be what happens in a non-integrable case. And this is actually a 2D case, which the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis even like more nicely satisfied than what I showed you in 1D. And now in the integrable, well, it's not satisfied, but really all the states that have similar conserved quantities, you see, they will have essentially the same observables. So then the figure here is like you will have to compare this not with all these, but with just a little line here.
Maybe I missed the point, but there is an infinite number of conserved quantities. So
in a finite system, in a lattice, there is a finite number of them. This is as many as lattice sites I have.
Okay. And suppose we have a system with infinitely many a very large system.
That's
right. Will it work, for example, this way? Suppose only three or whatever, five conserved quantities are different from zeros, and the others mm-hmm. are just zeros. Will it work like you forget about corresponding Lagrange multipliers and just care only about non-zero constants?
No, I mean, you are constraining the other ones to be zero. Yeah. Always, yeah. That you have to do it, yeah. That's and that's essentially it. So I will then conclude here, and let me try to summarize what the thing that I would like you to take out of this talk. So essentially, what we find in general is that away from integrability, this eigenstate thermalization hypothesis kind of satisfied. And that's what explains like why an isolated system like will thermalize from our point of view. Question that is open is that we do see that for any finite system that this breaks down as you approach the integrable point. But then the question is whether you will have really some finite threshold. That's an open question. We cannot say anything in that direction. So we find that this integrable system you can still describe them after relaxation using some kind of generalized ensembles. And this is, I think, the fundamental point about this ensemble is that, you see, your Hilbert space has an exponentially large number of states. So if you want to build this diagonal ensemble, which is like just what quantum mechanics will tell you, you will need this exponentially large number of parameters. However, these ensembles here, they only have a power law increase, and essentially it's linear increase with the system size. So this is really much less than what you need to do this diagonal ensemble, okay? Mm-hmm. And then finally, what we find is that these updated ensembles, they can be viewed as, you know, kind of like being satisfied because there is some generalized view of the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis that is working. And then one can start then thinking about whether we could do some kind of thermodynamics for isolated integral systems. So, and with that, I'm going to stop. I'm going to thank my collaborator, especially Emmy, who did all this last work, and then the funding agencies, and I'm going to thank you for your attention.
For the very nice talk. So I have time for one or two questions before we continue with the next talk.
Question. So sort of related to the question that was asked earlier about the additivity of constants of motion, and also your discussion later on about the way you define the generalized microcanonical ensemble by coarse grading, it reminded me of the way we do microcanonical ensemble for bosons and fermions, basically, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that also probably makes things extensive.
Yeah, I mean, in the
if you can coarse grain your constants of motion right. over some, and then you said that you know that all states that have similar conserved quantities, they have similar, right? Observables.
I totally agree with you. So, as soon as you like coarse grain, then you could think of them as additive.
And then you probably don't even need n. It's probably fewer, right?
No, you will need
probably more, like how many particles you have rather than the system size.
No, but you need to constrain the other ones to be zero.
Well, not really.
Yeah, you need to do that. The other one should not be occupied.
No. You're saying that in that interval, in certain intervals, you have to have one. I mean, just as we do when we do, you know, microcanonical ensemble for fermions and bosons.
So I am probably not understanding what. So
perhaps we can do that
okay.
later.
Mm-hmm. So
there another urgent question, otherwise we close this question. Okay, and let's thank Martin.